Very exciting.
Okay, so let's shift to this. Okay, so what we're going to be doing is we're going to be learning a coding system for understanding the process that goes on between a therapist and a child patient in a psychotherapy session. The unit of measure here is the entire session. So we're not going to be looking at microseconds of interactions between two people, like some of you might be familiar with mother-infant interaction. It's not like that. This is it's a very molar, as opposed to molecular coding system. So we're looking at a whole 45-minute session and conducting our coding based on that unit of measure. All right. So it's going to involve some skill and some really careful observation of what you see going on between the two parties. And one of the two parties happens to be in the room with us. Am I revealing too much?
No, I think once they start watching the tapes, they'll recognize me. and you might also recognize Shlomo Berry, who's a third-year student. So he and I are the two therapists in the video. And hopefully you won't recognize the child because he's none of your cases, but the child is great. Their videos are of him between age 6 and 8 in 2 years of treatment.
And actually, I don't know if you know this, but he's being seen.
Yes.
This year.
He is seen in the clinic this year.
And do you know who the supervisor is?
Knopfo, right? Yeah.
So it's still psychodynamic.
Still, well, it started out behavioral, and then she's.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
That's true.
Yeah. She
now,
wanted,
why I didn't get a chance to continue, I don't know.
I have no idea.
It's a mystery
that.
To me, but.
It's a great mystery. So he's still in the clinic. So it's actually really important that we remember to keep confidentiality, and because he is still a patient in our clinic, but he's not any of your patients. So you will be able to look at the videos objectively, and hopefully, I hope that me being part of these meetings won't be a confounding factor, and that you feel as though you can code objectively, you know, everything that's going on in the session, even though. I'll see the results.
In other words, feel free to criticize the therapist.
Yes, that's the thing. As a second-year therapist, there are times when maybe, you know, I missed an intervention or the intervention was one way or another, so I really would ask you right off the bat to please try to code what you see.
And we're going to be breaking down.
Give me extra forgiveness or anything. We'll break it down how it really looks.
We're going to be breaking down each of the sessions, especially in the beginning, and, you know, we're going to be critiquing, you know, her technique. We're going to be critiquing the patient, and indirectly you're going to be critiquing me because I supervised her on this case. So we want you to do that, and if you can't be open and honest with what you see and what you think is going on, then that skews or distorts the coding that's going to be taking place, and then that reduces the opportunities for us to find significant findings in her data. So we need the coding to be as accurate as possible, no holds barred, and that's going to allow us to correlate these data with outcome data and other kinds of measures that we've been using on these two patients. So
one patient, two therapists.
Well, yeah, exactly. Two therapists, one patient. So
right.
Does that sound?
Is the same one we use for practicing?
Yeah, so some of these videos might look a little familiar to you because we use these videos as practice videos for another dissertation on a different child. So now we might use some of those videos in order to practice for looking at this child. So.
I don't remember what happened.
Yeah, no.
He doesn't remember what happened yesterday.
Oh my gosh, Jeff, he asked me how many piles there were in the Q-sort.
I
was like, you've got to be kidding.
She's calling you out.
I was like,
how many piles again?
He knows there's
Wait a minute.
Six.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's
a shame. Seven.
You sound them to us earlier.
Dustin will be very helpful.
I was giving him a little drill. Run.
Now, Dustin, even before he was in this program, was Q-sorting away and establishing reliability with more seasoned clinicians. And so, you know, we're hoping that... Actually, you two were partners, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, we were partners.
These two established inter-rater reliability with each other.
That's We lost to Lynn by like...
It took us a few weeks to get our stride.
Like 0.1 or something.
Yeah, we had a little competition in our last coding team meeting. I decided to average the inter-rater reliability correlations between this team, the Dustin Laura team, and the other team, which was the Sylvia Leia Berger team. And I guess the Sylvia Leia Berger, they came by one, they beat by one point.
Can we do that again this time?
We didn't drug test them. It wasn't fair.
There was some performance enhancing drugs involved.
We should have some healthy competition, some prizes. I'm trying to make this, find ways of making this fun for everybody, because our coding team was fun, but being on a coding team myself, I have a few ideas as to how to make it even more fun and even more, it's intrinsically motivating because you're learning a lot, but I would also like to make it extrinsically motivating by paying you and other sorts of fun.
Well,
things.
Now, actually, the people who are doing their assistantships and fellowships, they're not being paid. In fact, the whole side of this room is not getting paid. Oh, that's true.
I was just like,
you're doing service disparity, right?
Yeah, but I'm not doing this for that. Yeah.
Are you doing something else for that?
Okay.
What is that?
I'm helping another fourth year student with her dissertation.
Oh.
That's why I had a mental breakdown last semester, because I was doing too much.
Too much.
Okay.
It happens.
Can you afford that?
For what it is, and then we'll apply for a grant.
Because, you know,
if we got a grant, great, and if we don't...
Okay, because we haven't even received the grant flyer yet for
NYU. Did Lene get a grant, though?
She
got a grant
did.
Eventually, but she paid out of pocket first. Okay, and I'm willing to do that.
Okay, so it would be Ajua, Jennifer, and well, Leah, you're just here to observe right now, but Stephanie and Dustin.
Mm-hmm. And Sylvia.
And Sylvia.
And I would like, one of the things that I found in our past coding team that was difficult and actually lowered morale and motivation was waiting until the very end of all of the coding to be paid. So I actually would like to pay you guys monthly, because I wish that. If I were on the team.
In fact, she's going to give you all in advance to...
No, there's no advance. But I would like to... I mean, I'm going to pay out of pocket first and then apply for a grant to reimburse myself. So I would like to pay you monthly to, you know, it's a time commitment. And I spent it working on someone else's dissertation. So I would like to sort of pay this as if it's a job. And I know that you all will take it very seriously. So I take it very seriously as well. And it's a big help to me. So that's
so
something that I am... saying right off the bat. And then those of you who are using it for hours.
We're getting paid.
You look good.
In a different way.
Yeah, you get paid, you know, through your work study.
So that's the Athey Lloyd guarantee.
Yes.
Now, as far as the timetable is concerned, some of you are ending this project at the end of the semester. Others of you are going to, I hope, will continue beyond the semester, those of you getting paid. I guess it depends on your schedule whether you can or not. Those of you who are ending, if you want to continue for pay, would they be able to do that?
I'll apply for as much as it is. We'll figure it out.
Now, when I would like to see this coding completed is by the third week of June. The reason why I say that is that Laura and I have applied to present a paper at the annual Society for Psychotherapy Research Conference in Northern California starting June 23rd. If our paper gets accepted for presentation, we're going to need some data to present.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the predicament I was in last semester trying to prepare for that talk I did here. This is going to be like a national, actually an international conference, and be nice to have data. So the deadline would be like the third week of June so that we could crunch some numbers and have something to present. So that would be the ultimate deadline. Now, how many total sessions do we have to code?
It's a little more or less than 60. I forget the actual number, but it's around 60.
Okay, so we have 60 to code, right? And we've got 4 teams, right? Including Sylvia. We've got four
teams.
So that means each team would be coding 15 sessions, roughly.
How long does it usually take to code a session?
It's 45 minutes to view the tape, And then it'll get faster with time, but cue sorting takes about an hour. It might take a little longer at first when you're getting warmed up.
We're going to do
but
practice.
Say about an hour. I mean, I would walk off 2 hours of your time a week to work on it. Well, that's up to you and your coding partner.
No, it's actually...
Huh? It's supposed to be 6 hours a week.
I know. I mean, there are other projects that I can give you other than this.
Yeah.
But I mean, there's interviews to do, right?
Yeah.
There's transcription to do.
Oh, yes.
but actually, until you guys get really proficient, we're going to do one a week. Mm-hmm. All right?
We're going to
talk about it, and then actually, at some point, we're going to break up into groups maybe, and Laura's going to supervise two teams, and I'm going to supervise two teams, and really talk about it. This is something where if you're not seeing things like your partner and like me and Laura, it's going to screw everything up. And so if I gave you three a week to do, you know, you come back the next week with three done and I see they're all crap, three of them are already have to be redone. So I want to do one a week and we'll just go like that until I feel like you're the team. A particular team can handle more than one a week, and then we might bump it up to two a week. I don't want to go to three a week. I just don't feel comfortable.
Yeah.
Iterator drift is the bane of the process researcher, and we want to avoid iterator drift at all costs. Does everybody know what iterator drift is? It's where two coders start seeing things differently. And their ratings begin to drift apart. And that's the worst thing you can have in this kind of research project because, you know, when we go to publish this, reviewers are going to say, why was your iterator reliability 0.4? And they're not going to publish it. So the minimum is 0.7. That's the absolute minimum reliability that we're looking for. And hopefully we're going to see something higher than that. What was Linnae's final average iterator?
0.7 something.
Yeah.
And I think Kia's was a little higher.
Kia's was 0.73.
Oh, 0.73?
Yeah.
Okay, Linnae's was like maybe around there. And that's overall. So if you have a week that you're 0.68, you know, the next week you might be like 0.8 or something, and so it all gets average. But we would look at it every week, and then if there's any problems, we would try to discuss them.
Is it unrealistic to hope for...
It depends on how careful you do the coding and the Q sorting. I would recommend more than 2 hours a week working on this.
Yeah, you know? I mean, a helpful tip is when I would watch videos, I would take notes as I was watching. And as you learn what the items on the cards are and you get familiar with them, you'll be like, oh yeah, that was, you know, this kind of intervention. Like, so you'll know how to take better notes because you'll be like, oh yeah, that's one of the cards, and make a note to yourself. So when you're going through the cards, it can go a little faster and you are, you know, remember what happened in the session. I would also code right after you view the video, because if you watch it on Monday and then you code it on Friday, even if you have notes, you're not going to remember like the tone, the effective tone. And
it's much harder to wait any amount of time after watching the video. I always ended up doing, and I think in the beginning I tried, you know, watching the video one day and then coding the next, and it was just like, huh?
That's when we almost booted you off the team, right?
You're like, better get in line here.
Yeah. And things like it's important to read the whole card, because if you read the whole description, it'll sometimes give examples of what that item could look like. And so, you know, little tricks like that
to read the descriptions.
Yeah, that's not even a trick. That's like mandatory.
Yeah.
But, you know, things like that. I mean, you know, so you're asking about how to get good reliability. We can keep discussing sort of ways to get... the best reliability that we can.
Yeah, I want to share with everybody, this is not the kind of a project where, you know, you can kind of hide and you can kind of skate through and no one's going to know. With a transcription, you know, I can't possibly listen to all your transcriptions and see how accurate they are. I can't do it. This is something where statistics don't lie, and you're going to give me your distributions, your QSOR distributions, your ratings every week, and I'm going to compare them to your partners, and then you might want to be involved also in Q-sorting.
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to sort, but I think what I'll do is watch the video each week that everyone else is watching, and that way I can sort of, you know, if there's a debate, I can moderate a little bit, because I've seen what happened in the video. Because I know you don't have time to watch the videos each week.
No, I'd like to watch the videos. I don't have time to Q-sort, though.
Oh, okay. Yeah, if you're able to watch the videos, too, that's great.
Yeah.
I probably won't sort them myself, since we wouldn't use my data, but I'll watch them with the sort.
Well, I mean, just maybe for when we are training, the training process, I might want to ask you to Q-sort.
Oh, so we can see how my sorts match up?
Yeah, because other than Dustin and Sylvia, no one's trained here. Nobody
knows
anything.
I see, so we can see how theirs are.
Exactly, and then I can correlate theirs with yours and Dustin's and Sylvia's, just to see how you're doing.
Yeah, I'm a seasoned coder.
Huh?
Now I'm a seasoned coder.
You are. Oh, okay. You two and Sylvia.
Comparing those two.
So the problem is that if you want to skate, it's not going to work, because I'm going to be every week correlating, if I get SPSS, I'm going to be correlating, you know, your distributions with these three people, and I'm going to know right away who's not doing the assignment or who's struggling, because your correlation is going to be low. And also, I'm going to try to do correlations among everybody, because when we initially start training, we're going to look at one session among everybody. We're not going to divide up into teams for a while yet. So typically those people who are struggling are the ones that have the lowest correlations with everybody else in the group. And it's not going to look good, you know, because I'm going to pass out the output to everybody. Everybody's going to see the output. Everybody's going to see how you did. So it's not to humiliate anybody. But we need 0.7 or higher reliability, and so that's the way it is. So if you want to avoid being the low person on the totem pole, you know, work harder and ask questions about what these items mean, how they are applied to the videotape data, you know, as Laura said, the tricks of how to do this, and really doing the careful observations that are required to establish inter-rater reliability. You know, watching the session more than once, you know, taking time to do the actual cue sorting properly. These are going to boost your inter-rater reliability ratings.
Also, feeling free to email Jeff especially, or myself, if you have questions during the week or while you're coding. It might be something that either I can answer right away, or it
Absolutely.
Might be something that we want to ask Celeste Schneider, who's the creator of the measure, because we're in contact with her, so we can ask her questions. So ask lots of questions, and that's how we'll get better and better.
If you get the lowest reliability, you have to wear a funny hat and sit in the
I have to identify funny hats and bring it in.
We'll have the dunce's corner.
To
just sit back here for the meeting.
I need to buy a funny hat to humiliate my team. Put it on the grant application.
Right.
Budget.
Actually, you know, I'm going to give Stephanie a pass here, because she's not even in the clinical program. So if she's the low man on the totem pole, I would expect that. So prove me wrong. But if someone else is a low person, it's not tolerable, because you guys are in a clinical program. You've already had a semester worth of, you know, clinical courses. And so I'm expecting great things from you guys. All right. Dustin's already a pro, so, you know. And Sylvia, too.
And sometimes mistakes happen because of sort of confusion about what the item means. Like, you might understand what the word transference means, but if the item's not really clear on the sheet, you know, just keep asking questions, and we'll just decide as a group what that item is supposed to mean.
Absolutely. And if we all disagree, you know, I can consult Celeste, who's basically on call for us. So she's happy to help out. And we, you know, when we did this before, I was in regular consultation with her, and she was very helpful to us in helping to clarify some of the items. Now, the child psychotherapy cue set that I sent out to you is the latest version. I don't know if you have it, but
this latest
January 2009. So
I probably have it. I know she changed.
This is not the version that we used to code Linnae's data.
Oh, then I need the new version.
But I emailed you, along with everybody else,
okay,
copy of this.
Maybe it's in there. I didn't open it, so I assumed I had it. Okay.
Right. Mm-hmm. So this is the latest version of this instrument. And so a lot of, you know, actually, she told me this, a lot of the revisions that are contained in this version were made as a result of our coding team from 2008. So it was very helpful in her clarifying some of the items, the wording, the descriptions, et cetera. So I think what I'm going to do is give people a lesson on the mechanics of queue sorting. So you two can go to sleep. And then, if we have time left, we can start talking about the items. I ask everybody to read this for today. Did everybody do that? At least you're honest.
Skimmed.
Okay. Because I want people to ask questions about these items. You people are going to know these items like you know the color of your hair. You know, these items are going to be ingrained in you. And I want people to ask questions about them because you're going to get to know them very, very well. And it would be a shame if you really never really understood an item and you were using it time after time. Wouldn't that be a shame?
Yeah, that would be a shame. Yeah, okay. If you have questions, ask. Like, yeah, definitely.
Okay, so, get into instructor mode.
It's a mediational model, I think.
Oh, I don't know. I think modern is nice. I still get those computers. I need a refresher.
Okay, moderational is.
Oh my gosh, can I take the class again?
I just need that coding sheet.
Yep.
So, actually, something else you should know, I'm going to podcast all of these coding team meetings. So if you miss a meeting or you want to review something that we talked about, you can actually go to my website. You guys have my. It's at the bottom of any email message I send out. So go to the website, go under, I think it's CPQ Coding Team. Click on that, and you'll see a list of all the podcasts, and just click on the one you want. They're in MP3 format, so you can download them, listen to them while you're jogging in Central Park.
Is there a password for those? No, right?
No, I don't think there is.
Just the
not, well, definitely not the podcasts, right. But... Huh?
The podcast should be open.
Yeah.
The videos we password protected. And
exactly.
We might do that again if we're going to distribute
absolutely.
Them that way. If we're going to distribute them that way, or I don't know how we're going
to yeah,
distribute
videos. Yeah, we need to decide that at some point.
You're my tech guy. We'll discuss.
Yeah. Okay. What we did was, for every session that we needed coded, actually Dustin password protected them, I think. The password was Celeste.
Yeah.
In honor
yeah,
of the developer of the coding system. And then you could just download them or actually watch them on the server, right?
Yeah, I think they would load on the server. Could
it'd
you also
be,
download them?
By the end, though, I was just sending them to everybody because with yeah, everyone's different computers, people had Macs and Windows, and it was always not working for some reason. Mm.
Right. Some people have difficulty.
Yeah, we worked out some of the technical glitches last year, so hopefully we'll be off and running.
Jason might be helpful with that, too.
Thank you, yeah.
All right.
Why is it always the guy? It just is. I'm happy for both of your help. I'm not resenting
that was
all,
smooth.
But I'm not good with computers.
That was really smooth.
Sure.
All right, so... So you go to the website and you'll have the podcasts, you'll have possibly the actual sessions, you'll have the electronic copy of the coding sheet is there, and actually also I believe the items are there too, in case you need another copy of this. Huh?
We have the email still.
Yeah, that's true, you have that. So. I'm going to go over the mechanics, and then maybe Dustin or Laura can go over the actual making of the deck, the Q-sort deck. And maybe we can talk about Kia's recipe box. You remember that?
I wasn't in Kia's coding team.
That's true, you weren't. Sylvia was. She would
the
remember.
Empty chair.
The empty chair syndrome.
Will speak to it. Yeah.
Okay, so Q-sort is basically an ideographic method of understanding and coding rather than a nomothetic method of coding, which means that once you perform a Q-sort, you have an arrangement of items that uniquely characterizes an individual. So I'm going to contrast that with a Likert type scale. Likert type scale, you have a series of items, right? And maybe the scale is from 1 to 5. And so item 1 is blah, 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 and you give that a 4. Item 2 is a 2. Item 3 is 5. Item 4 is 1. Item 5 is 2. Item 6 is 2. Item 7 is 4. Item 8 is 1. Item 9 is 5. Okay? Now, a lot of questionnaires and surveys actually follow a Likert type scale format. There are some problems with this format, though. Can anybody think of problem? Possible problem?
Well, depending on how the question is phrased, we might have to reverse course some. I mean, you have to make sure they're all going in the right direction.
Correct. So that's something you have to always pay attention to. What else? If I said the word bias, what would come to mind?
Bias.
Yes.
Just people's preconceptions, you mean?
Yes.
Of what what a therapy session should be like, or what the person should feel like, or just things that keep from being an objective look at the session.
So let's say that I'm watching a session and I'm in a really angry mood. Okay, and the rating scale is 1 to 5. 1, it's a shitty therapist. 5, it's the ideal therapist. I'm in a bad mood. Okay, so I go down the list of items about the quality of the therapist, and I go 1, 1, 1, 2, 1, 1, 2, 1, 1. You can do that, and you look at that and you say, "Geez, man, Goodman's having a bad day." Right? That's one of the problems with a Likert type scale, right? There's response biases. So halo effects, you guys ever heard of that in undergrad? You might see a particular therapist in a very positive light. So you might like Laura as a person, and if we were doing a Likert type scale, you might give her all 5s, It's a big problem with Likert type scales. So the Q sort is a very different method for coding data. The Q-sort actually doesn't rely on Likert type scale at all. What's neat about the Q-sort is that you're forced to place items in particular piles. There's no way you can avoid it. So you see this coding sheet. There are 9 piles that you put the items in. From most uncharacteristic to most characteristic of the session that you are viewing. So you're viewing a session, and I'm just going to pick an item out of the hat. Therapist behaves in a didactic manner. Now, you might not know what that means yet, and we'll go through the items more carefully next time. But therapist, so you watched a videotape with Laura interacting with her patient, and the item is therapist behaves in a didactic manner. Well, is that behavior, her behaving in a didactic manner, was that characteristic of the session, uncharacteristic of the session, or kind of neutral or not applicable? It was neither characteristic nor uncharacteristic. You have to make a decision, right? And let's say you say it was uncharacteristic. So you put it there in that pile, pile 3. Kind of uncharacteristic. Not the most uncharacteristic thing about the session, but uncharacteristic. So you put in pile 3. Well, according to this, you can only put 12 items in pile 3. 5 items in pile 1, 8 items in pile 2, 16 items in pile 4, 18 items in pile 5, 16, 12, 8, and 5. So let's say you already have 12 items in pile 3 by the time you get to therapist behaves in a didactic manner, but you really feel that it belongs in pile 3. Can you actually secretly make it 13 items? No, you can't do that. You'd have to move another item to another area in the QSORT deck or in the pile system here, or you have to move therapist behaves in a didactic manner to either pile 2 or pile 4.
Are they ranked within each pile? Like, no. Are the 12 cards ranked within, or is it just...
No.
No. That's the nice thing. I mean, you've heard of ordinal system, like there's continuous data, ordinal data, nominal data. This is an ordinal data system. So it's not like IQ, where you have like 100 is average, 90 is on the border between low average and average, etc. Or weight, 150 pounds, 140 pounds. These items are ordered, so you don't know the distance between the items. So I can rank order these items from 1 to 100. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Maybe item 2 is really, really... I mean, item 1 might be so uncharacteristic, so incredibly uncharacteristic, but item 2 might not be nearly as uncharacteristic as item 1, but the distance between item 2 and item 3 might be very little. Like, they're so closely aligned with each other as far as characteristicness is concerned that they're hard to distinguish. So the distance between the items, it doesn't matter in an ordinal system, Dustin.
Yeah, I was just going to say, one thing that I always kept in mind that helped a lot was just remembering to do them in relation to each other, not in relation
exactly
to like what you think is a good, you know.
Well, that's where I'm going to get to that. So you were ahead of the game.
And also, it'll make more sense later once you have them all filled in than what you do with that information. It'll probably be a little more clear.
Now, Leia knows this because she's my supervisee, and she's doing QSORTing in her supervision. So she has some experience with the mechanics of this. So it would be a really, really painful task if I had you take all the items for every single session and do the actual, line them up in 100, all 100, in each one has its own pile. That'd be a very, very painful experience. So the QSORT actually makes things a little easier for you. We divide them up into little piles of items, but they have to be, it's a forced choice distribution, so you have to have the exact number of items in each pile. And why 5 items on the outside and 8 and 12, 16 and 18? Why that particular distribution? Because... what does that look like to you?
A bell curve.
A bell curve, right. It's a normal distribution. It's almost very, very close to a normal distribution. Why is that important? Because a normal distribution is important so that we can perform most statistical analyses on the data. If it weren't in a shape of a normal distribution, we would be limited in the kinds of statistical analyses that we could perform. We have to perform non-parametric statistical analyses, which limits what we can do with the data. But because it's a normal distribution, we can do parametric stats, which is the kind of stats that most people use with continuous data or ordinal data. So for that reason, we have this distribution. This method of coding protects us from response bias. Because you are rating each item in relation to each other, it kind of protects the respondent from putting a lot of items up in the most characteristic and not many down here, or too many items down in most uncharacteristic and not so many up here. You have to rate the items in a normal distribution. There's no other way. You're forced to do that. So you look at each item and you have to rate it in relation to all the other items in the deck. So you're not thinking about Laura and you're saying, oh, know, she sucks. One. You can't possibly do that with this kind of a system, which is, makes this such a neat methodology for use, especially with therapy sessions that are very open to transference and counter-transference issues. I mean, we struggle with that with Linnae's data, right? Some of us cringed when we saw some things that Linnae was doing, you know.
Right with me too, and with Shlomo, you know, beginning therapist.
Exactly.
Know?
So you're going to cringe at some things that Laura does and that Shlomo does in the videos, but you're not going to be able to put all the items in one. You're not going to be able to. So you're rating the items in relation to each other rather than forcing each item to have an absolute value. The values are determined by the other items in the deck. All right. So there is a trick to doing the cue sorting. Usually what I do when I cue sort and what I tell my students to do is, first of all, you take the items and you divide them into three piles. Generally uncharacteristic, neutral, and generally characteristic. So you go through the item and you just quickly, fairly quickly, divide them up into the three piles. Also, you should roughly, and I wouldn't consciously think about this while you're doing it, but you want to generally have twice as many items in the middle pile as in the outer piles. So there should be ultimately 25 items in these three piles, 25 items in 7, 8, 9, and then in 4, 5, 6, you should have 50 items. So 50 plus 25 plus 25 is 100. So that's why I say, when you're going through just doing the first pass through the items, you should have twice as many items in the middle pile as in the two outer piles, the left and right pile. Okay, so once you've done that, and that should be fairly quick, that shouldn't take a whole lot of time. Then, when you've done that, then what I do is I go to the left pile first, the most uncharacteristic, and I take the 25. Now, you might not have 25, you might have 22, you might have 28. You know, it's not going to be exactly 25. You want to take that and you want to divide up this pile of 25 into these three piles, 1, 2, and 3. Pile 1 gets 5 items, pile 2 gets 8, pile 3 gets 12. All right? So, let's say you have 22 items. What do you do? You need 5 plus 8 plus 12 is 25 items. What do you do? Anybody? Anybody?
Do you wait to go through the other piles and see which ones are less characteristic?
Exactly. What you're going to do is, ultimately, when we get to this pile, you're going to put items into 4, 5, and 6, and you're going to have to steal 3 items from the middle pile here to add on to pile 3. Shouldn't be hard filling pile 1 and pile 2. It's pile 3, you're going to be missing, you're going to have 9 items in pile 3, and you're going to need 12. So you're going to have to steal 3 from pile 4 to make up the other 3. Okay, now let's say you have 28 items. So you go through and you put 5 items in pile 1, 8 in pile 2, 12 in pile 3, you're going to have 3 left over. Well, guess what? Those 3 are then going to make up 3 of your items for pile 4.
That seems an easier problem.
Yes, it is. Absolutely. So then once I'm done with pile 3, or pile 1, if this is 1, 2, and 3, once I'm done with pile 1, and of course I might not be done with pile 1 if I have only 22 items, I need to steal 3, but I'm done for the time being. I go to pile 3 next, and I do the exact same process with pile 3, noting that pile 9 gets 5 items, pile 8 gets 8 items, and pile 7 gets 12 items. And the same issues, if you have 22, you have to steal 3 from pile 6 over here. If you have 28, you're going to be giving pile 6 3 items.
Okay.
I work my way in. That's how I do it. Now, you two might have a different method, but this is what I taught you guys, so mm-hmm. I assume this is what you guys do. And then the last pile I attack is the middle pile, which is the biggest pile. It's also the least important pile statistically, but, you know, spend some time on it. These items are the least important or the neutral items, and they really don't drive the unique characteristics of the distribution as much as these piles do. These piles really carry all the meaning of the distribution for that particular session. But you go to the middle pile, and then you divide up these items into 16, 18, and 16. Now, you might have some left over, in which case, you know, they're going to go either to pile 3 or pile 7, or you're going to have less than 50, in which case you're going to take the items that were left over from pile 3 and put them on in pile 4, or you're going to take some items left over from pile 7 and put them into pile 6. Okay?
This is what the piles look like in the beginning. First 3 piles.
You laminated your cards?
Yeah, I'm looking at that
too. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Dustin's on the ball.
You're leading the putting together Q-Sort cards discussion, because mine are not that pretty.
These are under warranty of at least 3 years.
Wow. They'll be coded forever.
Do
your dissertation on it, too.
Right. He's gonna carry those into his postdoc, and then, you know.
You're going to have to do new cards.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Well, new now.
Yeah, because...
Well, I'll look at the items and see what.
Sadly.
Yeah. Well, we made a lot of corrections that became the corrections.
That's true.
Oh, yeah, I wrote some corrections.
I'll check. I could just change the cards that are different.
You could. Also, you have to look at the descriptions, too, because she changed the descriptions, yep, too, to make them more lively.
Yep.
Okay, so once you've done that, then what do you do? Okay, so you take the... And I know Leia Berger actually had a trick that I never memorized, but...
I remember. That was a great trick.
How to put it into the Excel document.
Exactly.
Some trick. I can't remember.
If you remember...
Let's do the easy way first.
Yeah, let's do the traditional, conventional way first.
And we'll learn time-saving tricks later.
Right. So you take the pile one, and you flip over your cards, and it'll have the item numbers on the back, or on the front.
They're on the front, too.
On the front, too. Okay. So then you just write the item number in the boxes on your coding sheet. Do the same thing with pile 2, pile 3, etc. to pile 9. Not difficult. All right. Then you're done. But there's one more step, and that is you have to send it to me so that I can compile it with everyone else's and see how you did and check iterator reliability and all of that. So what you would do is... if you have SPSS, that's great, but I don't have SPSS right now, so we're going to do this in Excel. So in Excel, all I need is one column. And you can call it, you could put your name as the variable label. All right, and maybe the number of the session or something like that. So your name and the number of the session. And then... for the first row, row 1, there's row 2, row 3, row 4. For row 1, row numbers are going to serve as our item numbers. So, item 1 would be row 1, and so you have to look on your sheet here and locate where item 1 is located. It might be in pile 6, might be in pile 2, might be in pile 9. I don't know where it is, but you've got to find it. And then note the pile number where you found it. So let's say it's in pile 2. So you enter a 2 in row 1. Item 2, where is that? Oh, it's in pile 8. Okay. Item 3, oh, that's in pile 5. Item 4, oh, that's in pile 3. All the way down to item 100. So, and these will all be the pile numbers. And you save that as a file with your name as a file name and email that to me the day before our meeting.
So I have, it would be faster just to go through each one of these and put it in.
And then you
so
do
you're
like
not hunting. Because so you know the order here, mm-hmm. So you can do, you know, like 70,
that's the trick that Leia
12,
came up
4.
With, that you just entered them
yeah.
pile by pile, and then there was like a something like sort by
yeah.
number or something. But I don't.
When I do that, before I put them up there, I order them. So from smallest to biggest, and that way when you're entering it into the spreadsheet, you're not like all over.
You're working your way down the spreadsheet, that makes sense.
Yeah, like you're 1, 1, 1, 1, 1.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
But if this sounds a little bit complicated, maybe we can like spend a meeting sometime sort of like doing it on the screen or something.
Yeah.
If this is if you know how to do it that way, great, save yourself the time. But if this sounds complicated, I would suggest just the hunt and peck method.
Yeah, I mean, whatever is easiest for you guys. I mean, I want to save you guys time, and Dustin knows the trick that Leia discovered, but...
It saves a few minutes,
yeah.
But otherwise, I mean, the bulk of your time is in coding.
Exactly,
This is just sort of data entry.
Right. In future coding team meetings, we're actually going to have the PowerPoint projector and everything, so we can actually look at a actual video that you guys had coded, and B, you know, coding procedures and things like that, like SPSS outputs and things like that. So, so we'll do that in the future. So you want to talk about, just real quick, you want to talk about the lamination and all that stuff? And
yeah, I mean, you just print out the manual, but make sure you print it on the side, one side.
Yeah, you're going to have to reprint that.
Because you need to basically cut out each item so that, you know, it's just by itself, and so then once you have all the items cut out, you don't have to laminate them. I just did that.
You laminate them on the page.
Because mine always would get ripped up and
yeah, you can laminate on the page.
Or you could tape or glue them onto index cards if you buy a pack of 100 index cards, but just buy the big kind.
Right. That's what, that's what I did originally, is I put some on the index cards.
Just no, bigger than 5. I think bigger. They're bigger.
Make sure to cut out the whole item, including the description, because it's important to read the description.
It's essential. It's essential. You can't do this project by just cutting the item. So, you know, therapist behaves in a didactic manner. If you just cut that out, that's not going to work. You need to include place toward characteristic direction, blah, 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 and also place toward uncharacteristic direction if blah, blah, blah. Those little descriptions are going to be very helpful to you. If you want to get high inter-rater reliability, you're going to have to read those descriptions to help you, guide you, where to place these items.
Yeah, and if there's like, I don't know if this is what you can use, but you can buy like laminated sheets.
Yeah,
you just literally stick the sheet in, and then when you just close it and seal it, and then you can just...
You have a machine?
No, it's not a machine. It's like literally you can just buy, they're like sheets of paper.
Oh, really?
Like
yeah.
Oh.
It's like it's a stick, and you literally put what you want
maybe
in there.
That.
And there's no like
that's
putting
what I
through
did.
Any machine.
Yeah.
There's
you can put like, you can fit like 6 cards on one sheet and then you just, you know,
oh,
put them out.
Oh, wow. That's nice.
Yeah.
Now, a former student in our program, Kia Edwards, who she did a dissertation using the adult version of this coding system. We coded 127 sessions of inpatient borderline patients. She won the dissertation award that year, and she is now she has a job in the Bronx doing something, but we're actually publishing her dissertation research right now. We've got to revise and resubmit from the Journal of Psychotherapy Research, and we're working on finalizing the draft, so it's very exciting. It's actually it's the journal that the Society for Psychotherapy Research publishes.
Okay.
So we're hoping that Laura's trajectory is in the same direction. But what she did was, she actually made her cards with the index cards, glued them on the back, and then she bought a recipe box. And she put them in a recipe box and carried them around like that. And all the other coders made fun of her. But she was the last one to have the laugh because she won the dissertation award. So
probably not for on account of the
recipe
box.
Where did
she
get that many inpatients? Like what in your Manhattan?
It was at Westchester Division, New York Presbyterian.
Wow.
And it was a data set that a colleague and I had, and so she didn't collect the data.
Oh,
Jeff has mountains of uncoded data, if anyone is interested in doing dissertations.
The data king.
With them. Like, this data came from me and from Shlomo and from the clinic, but you have a ton of data that can be used. So that's a little...
Absolutely. Or you can do what Laura did, and you videotape sessions of a patient from the clinic and turn it into a single case dissertation. You can do that.
So you started that in your second?
Yeah, in my second year, and I didn't know that this was going to be my dissertation then, but Jeff was my supervisor, and we watched the videos in supervision, and he had me Q-sorting them. So, I mean, I saved them all, and then I started thinking about sort of how could I use them. And so you can start, if you're interested in single-case research like this, this is one of, like, the best measures for single cases, because, you know, otherwise you can write up a case study, but that's not an empirical study, and that won't fly as a dissertation for this program. So so this is a great way to break it down into units if you have data like that.
It's a good idea to videotape.
It now,
It's a good idea to videotape your cases in the clinic next year anyway.
Audio tape to your adults.
Because you're going to need to present a case in the summer after your third year for the clinical competency examination. And so it's good to videotape just in case you need a case to present. You know, a lot of students don't like to present cases from their second year because they've improved by the end of the third year so much. But often in your third year when you do externships, they don't allow videotaping or audio taping, and that's a requirement to pass the CCE, that you have a videotaped or audio taped session to present. So therefore, a lot of students present cases from their second year with all the flaws and everything, because we allow students to video and audio tape at our clinic. So you're going to be videotaping anyway, so why not turn it into, you know, kill two birds with one stone? And that's what Laura did.
Yep, this client was also my CCE client. So
she made a presentation on this case.
Yeah, I've really gotten a lot of mileage out of this client. You know,
he's a great kid.
Well, he's a great kid. I can't tell you very much about him, like his name or his diagnosis or anything like that. You might be curious.
Well, I assume,
and you might have your own guesses, but we can't.
Eventually,
they
will know the kid's name because you say it in the sessions.
Oh yeah, his first name. But I won't give you
information. Yeah, because then you wouldn't be blind. We can't give you diagnostic information, but
you might have guesses. But you know, you'll learn so much about kids like this through watching him, and you'll learn a lot about therapy do's and don'ts, because you'll see my do's and don'ts as I went through the whole second year in Shlomo too. So, and you guys are first year, so you'll like go into the clinic like with all this, seeing all this, and then you'll get your child clients in the clinic, and then you'll sort of be starting off running. Because I would hear the Q-sort cards in my head as I was doing therapy. I don't know if you're experiencing that, but I would say, like, oh my gosh, you know, like, child has insight or something. And I was like, oh yeah. So it helps you remember your sessions better if you have a framework to sort of conceptualize what's going on.
I was rating my own therapist at some
point. Yeah, you're like, I don't think she's being very...
These items get so ingrained in your head. I'm like,
attuned to me, you know, or whatever, you know, some of this terminology, and it'll be really, it's intrinsically very valuable.
How were these developed? To you guys. How were they developed?
Oh,
Celeste did her dissertation at Berkeley, and she spent a number of years working on this coding system with Enrico Jones, who was her mentor, and he's really the developer of the adult coding system, the adult Q-sort, and she basically modified and adapted his Q-sort for her doctoral dissertation. So, but these items represent the... widest possible range of process elements of a psychotherapy session for children. One third of the items represent therapist behaviors, techniques, interventions. One third of the items represent child behaviors, interactions, etc., with the therapist. And one third of the items represent the interaction between the patient and the therapist. So it's roughly a third, a third, and a third. But these items really are a pretty complete set of the possible process elements of a psychotherapy session. And it was developed also from a variety of theoretical viewpoints, cognitive behavioral, psychodynamic, gestalt, existential, and there might have, I think, interpersonal as well. So it represents a wide, it's pan-theoretical. So it represents a wide variety of process elements of various types of psychotherapy sessions. So it's really a quite comprehensive system that's becoming increasingly used, in the, especially the adult system. The child system, though, is still, there's not much published
on it.
It
was only created in 2002.
Yeah.
So this is pretty new and exciting research that we hope to publish. So, yeah, so getting this measure more widely used.
Laura's on the cutting edge over here.
Oh, yeah.
So any questions?
Oh, yeah, I have a question.
Yeah.
It doesn't relate to anyone else but me, but does the child happen to be an ethnic minority or underprivileged in any way?
Well, diagnostically, yes.
Yeah, you could make a case for it. If you pitched it, if you want to pitch it to Camillo to satisfy your hours, yeah, you could probably.
Actually, what you could tell him is that we can't reveal the diagnosis to you,
right.
But he can talk to me and I can reveal it to him. Yeah. And trust me, the diagnosis would qualify. Because we've encountered this before with other works.
I think another student got...
Yes.
Got a previous child to count
for that?
Those hours. Well, it was Cheyenne, the other child.
Right.
But I think this child might qualify if you made if you made the case to Camillo. So
absolutely.
Yeah, if you want to help.
Absolutely.
On that end, yeah, maybe we could get the hours to.
So just have him contact me, and I'll let him know. I can't tell you the diagnosis for research reasons, but.
Right.
This should certainly count, and then that'll save you some money.
Sure. Get those hours to count. Okay, great. another thing about money, I'm not paying for the practice sessions that we do, and we'll do some practice to make sure our reliability gets up to standard, but then once we do the real videos, I'm paying $25 per video to each of you who are not using it for hours.
And so, for those who
and that's
are...
Later, that's what previous
that's
studies have paid.
We've been doing that for the last 2 or 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Those of you who are research assistants and fellows and whoever else, these the practice hours do count toward your hours. So you two do get paid, and then the rest of you don't.
Yeah.
Sadly, until we actually...
Until we get up, but the faster we get up to good reliability, the faster then we can start doing the real videos. And
getting paid.
So.
But those of you who aren't getting paid for the practice, I mean, the practice is really very valuable and worthwhile just for your clinical expertise. And other students in the program aren't getting this. You know, you're really, I think you're getting a great deal. You're not paying tuition. Think of it that way.
So for next week, we're to come in with our own sets.
Yes, come in with your made, and I'd love to see recipe boxes.
Or rubber bands. Just
or rubber bands.
So you don't have one go rogue, and then you don't have the full set, and then you sort the whole thing, and then are missing.
We don't waste Sarah Palin items. Okay. So make these up, and then next week, please come in with questions. I don't want anybody not to come in with questions about these items. Because we're going to really get into the items next week and talk about them ad nauseum. And any questions you have about the items, we want to help.
Okay, so we won't do a practice video this week.
No,
we'll
no.
Item review next week.
Yeah.
So we should put the item number on the back of the card as well.
If you want, sometimes that's helpful because then when you flip it over to write it on the sheet, you have the numbers. But the numbers are on the front too. I never wrote them on the back.
Okay.
You can just leave them face up.
You can leave them face up and then copy the number from there.
Okay.
But just make sure the whole item makes it onto your card.
Including the descriptions. And if you have any questions as you're developing your decks, just email me or email Laura.
My email address. Is
leave a bit wide space too in front of you when you're doing the coding, when you're doing the sorting, like a size of a large carpet or something.
Right.
Okay.
Now, if you're Sylvia, she has actually done Q sorting on an airplane. Remember that?
Is the tray big enough for the nine?
She did it. What she did was she had an empty seat and she used that tray as well.
Every week I had to clear desk space because my desk is so messy, so I just sort of move everything to the side to me. Because, you know, you got to have room for nine piles, you know. So clear a space, you'll want to pick a time when you...
I always do it on the floor.
Rested, and you have time to both watch and code.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is my email, lathieloyd, all one word, @gmail.com, and you guys obviously have Jeff's. But yeah, feel free to ask any questions or concerns.
Can I have an idea of a way that we may share the videos? That
great.
Might be really
oh, great.
Easy,
great. Like yeah, that's always kind of a hassle to figure out how
easy way for them to be uploaded and easy way for everybody to access.
The problem
the
is the file sizes are very big.
This would be like, I mean, I know that we can get 2 gigabytes free.
Have
they been more than 2 gigs? Dustin, do you remember?
No, they might be. I guess it's
sometimes we shrunk them down.
Yeah, you found a way to shrink them down, and the video was grainier, but you could still see what's going on. How many were they?
Oh, that's right.
I don't think they're more than 1.5 gigs each.
After
they're
he shrunk
big
them?
Files.
Or?
No, before shrinking. I have to look at them.
Oh, okay, so maybe
you wouldn't
need
to. But they're
kind
of like really hefty files. The video camera we were using at the time was weird. So, but I have them on regular size DVD-ROMs at the moment. So those can be either, I mean, we can copy a million copies and distribute them, or we can try to upload it onto some server. Mm-hmm. Or
the only consideration is that it has to be password protected.
Yes. Yeah, it is. It's the, okay. It's the kind of thing where like you can give access to certain people.
Yeah. 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 Excellent. Excellent.
Yeah. Because we were.
I mean, it's not going to
we
be.
We were sending
I mean,
it by
someone
email,
else could
but, yeah.
theoretically give the access to somebody else too, just like someone could give someone else the password. So
right.
Like,
but yeah. if we all know the password, then we should be good. And
you'd be the web the webmaster.
Yeah. But it'll be a specific link.
And try to keep the videos confidential. Like if you're living with roommates or something other, try to do them in private. And you know that this. These parents were very kind to allow me to videotape their child, so, try to keep
and
that
if anybody good. Happens to recognize this kid, let us know right away. You wouldn't be able to participate.
Oh, yes. If you know this kid or this family, yes, let us know right away. But hopefully that won't be an issue.
It's unlikely.
What's
I mean,
the age of the child?
He started at age 6, and he ended, he's still in treatment now, but the videos will go through age 8, 7,
yeah. See, for Uganda, that wasn't a problem.
There's
a slightly higher probability that you might know this kid, so if you do, let us know.
Try to stop hanging out with those kind of kids.
That's our job, to hang out with these kids. What are you in this field for? Thank you guys so much for your interest.
This is exciting.
And,
that's great.
Yeah, it's going to be cool. It's going to be very cool.
Not that transcriptions aren't fine. They are.
No, they're not. They're really not. Not to me, anyway.
So this is going to be more fun, I think.
Yeah,
and it's going to be a lot more valuable for next year.
That's great you guys are doing this in advance of any clinical work.
Yeah.